plate a potential nugget.
Rajiv, moving on, you talk about three levels of listening, which I found interesting. You speak about level one being what the person is saying, level two being how the other person is feeling, and level three being how you are feeling. Can you expand on this? I found, once again, you laying it out in a structure, very helpful. How does one build the muscle to listen across all these levels?
Yeah. I think, so just to clarify the three levels. So one is what you're saying, right? So let's say you are saying you made a hurtful comment, right? So that's what I'm hearing. And so that's one level of listening. I'm only reacting to or picking up only what you are saying. The other is I am empathetically listening and understanding, you know, you made a hurtful comment. Where is it coming from? Oh, you must be feeling frustrated about that issue, or maybe you're feeling let down, or, you know, so now I'm being really empathetic and trying to engage in my mind on the feelings that you are experiencing, which are leading you to say what you're saying, right? So that's the next level. The final level, which is pretty hard, but quite powerful, is understanding what's going on within me. So when you made a hurtful comment and now I'm saying, oh, you know, maybe you got hurt about something, maybe I let you down in some way or something, what's going on within me? Maybe I'm feeling frustrated, maybe I'm feeling angry, or maybe I'm feeling regretful, and so on. And connecting with all these levels is so important because that raises the quality of the conversation. Firstly, it is going to alter my response, right? If I reacted to what you say something hurtful, I react to it, we know where that conversation is going to go. If I'm a little more empathetic and I understand where it's coming from, I will respond in a little better manner, right? Hopefully I'm kind of appreciative of where you are, what's happening, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm still not mindful of my own limitations here, which is that when somebody says something that seems sensitive, I very easily get into a very permissive mode because I like being kind to people. Right. So again, it, the communication and the interaction is not going to be most transformational or most effective because, okay, I picked up your sort of emotional cues, but my own emotional flaws or my own emotional triggers are still at play. So if I can become aware that, hey, I know I'm getting drawn into this emotional drama because that's my tendency. If I'm just aware of that, maybe I'll respond differently. And hence, we will move forward on that conversation in a very calm, assertive, authentic, meaningful way. And it'll become a transformational conversation. So that's kind of the three levels of three layers of listening that I've noticed. And again, in my coaching work, of course, this is so crucial because not only do I need to connect with my clients on what's happening with them, but also what's happening inside me. Because again, in a holistic way, Deepak, what is this conversation? What's the purpose of that conversation, on any conversation? Part of it is to, you know, move forward on what somebody else needs, et cetera, et cetera. But part of it is our own growth collectively. As you said, you know, from the podcast, you grow because you pick up some new nuggets or whatever. But as much as I am giving this sort of interview or whatever, I am learning, I'm growing myself. Because, but only if I'm attuned to what's happening inside me, right? That's my journey of self-growth, which is happening in any process, in any conversation. So again, going back to your question of how does one do it, I think it goes back to, you know, it might sound like a broken record, Deepak, but it has to begin with deepening that self-awareness and doing it through creating that reflective practice, where we become more attuned to what's happening inside us at all times.
You know, one of the people I spoke to at the podcast, a lady called Jennifer Garvey Berger, she actually also talks about listening to our body for cues as well. You know, sometimes listening, we limit it to the world of grammar and English and language, but sometimes there are a lot of cues that we can get through our body in terms of how we feel, you know, how our wrist clenching, is our back stiffening and so on, which I thought was quite profound in the way we listen to ourselves. Any nuance there, Rajiv, in terms of listening to ourselves? Anything that you've sort of gleaned through the years of this practice?
I think her point is totally valid. We can definitely pick it up in our physical sense as well, right? And physical sense is not just yet. One is the body. The other is the impact of sort of the emotions in the body, right? I mean, whether it's the stiffening of the back or, you just that sort of sinking feeling in your stomach if you are feeling nervous or something like that, or sometimes a punch in the gut if somebody said something that you really sort of were extremely uncomfortable with. And all of these, just being attuned to that. I think the other thing is, as I said, just the meditative nature is to be mindful all the time. And as we build that practice of mindfulness, we will naturally be just more aware. It just happens. It's like our, it's like the radio, right? You tune it to a certain frequency and that's the music you're going to hear. And you tune it to a different frequency, you start hearing a different music. So with mindfulness meditation practice, you will alter the frequency at which you're listening. It'll just happen. It's not a conscious thing and so forth. It'll just happen. You'll just be in everyday moment, just more aware of what's happening inside you at different points in time. So
that's a wonderful metaphor. I guess one needs to be a minimum certain age to relate to that metaphor of tuning a radio. But it's so powerful with you. And if I may stretch the metaphor further, there's a little bit of noise that you need to deal with as you move from one station to another. But the pursuit is worth it.
Good one. Yeah. You'll eventually get there. Yeah.
I love the nuance here in what Rajiv says. Very often we hear a lot of people talk about focusing on the emotion of the sender, but being aware of our emotions as we receive these signals significantly impacts the way we show up in a conversation, I guess. In the conversation, I referred to a piece of insight from Jennifer Gavi Berger. Here's Jennifer talking about listening to the signals from our bodies.
I mean, there's this way that many of us have been taught over centuries in our cultures and our societies that the mind is the great thing and the body is sort of the source of temptation or misleading data. And so we've learned to not trust or believe what our body tells us and really think that it's the mind that is the most glorious human achievement. Actually, when we look at sort of our psychobiology, our body is giving us signals all the time that our mind is making sense of very, very quickly and often reacting to without noticing that it was an embodied sensation that we were reacting to. So if we give someone, some studies that are greater, like if you give somebody a shot of adrenaline and then you have them meet a stranger, depending on the gender of that stranger, they're either likely to be more drawn to that person as a love interest or more threatened by that person as a possible threat or enemy after this shot of adrenaline than they were under normal circumstances. And they tend to attribute that to the other person, right? And they don't attribute that to their bodies in any way. And so their body is giving them a signal, and then they're acting out of that signal without ever noticing that the signal happened. This is very dangerous, right? That we're responding to data by taking action in a way that's completely divorced from our seeing of the data in the first place. So we need to get much more in touch with what our body is telling us. I see leaders all the time, and you see there are studies about this as well. People who go into meetings hungry, because leaders I work with are very busy, and they hate all the ideas. Like, they hate all the ideas on the table. None of the ideas are quite right. Well, is this about the quality of the ideas, or is this about the fact that you didn't have time for lunch? Like, we don't tend to think, oh my goodness, I hate these ideas because I have no blood sugar and I have no creativity left. But actually, this is the way our bodies work. There's fabulous studies of the thing that makes you most likely to get parole when you are in front of a parole board in prison is how close to a break the judges are when they look at your case. If you're right after they ate lunch or breakfast, then you're very likely to get paroled. If you're right before it's time for a break or a meal, you're very unlikely to get paroled. Now, this has nothing to do with the merits of these cases, right? Wow. This is completely because the judges are responding to a bodily sensation, but they don't know that they're responding to a bodily sensation. So they think they're responding logically. If we're more in touch with our bodies, we can avoid those mistakes.
If this topic is of interest, you might like the curated playlist on listening at the podcast.